Welcome to Premier Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, England have reached the Euro 2024 final after beating the Netherlands 2-1. Ollie Watkins lashed in a 90th minute winner to send the Three Lions to Berlin. But can the Netherlands feel hard done by after VAR drama led to a Harry Kane equaliser? Standing England's way now is Spain, the tournament's best team, who beat France 2-1 in Tuesday's semi-final. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Lawrence and Tom Gallagher. So then, boys, England into the final, Euro 2024, beating the Netherlands 2-1. Lauro, how good does that sound?
Yep, sounds great. And it's obviously back-to-back European Championship finals for Gareth Southgate now, which is a great achievement from someone who's had an awful lot of stick over the course of this tournament. I felt quite calm going into the game last night. I just felt that we turned a little bit of a corner in terms of the performance and the kind of overriding mentality from the fans and the media. And other than a very good goal from the Dutch early on, I thought we controlled the game. We created so much more space in the first half in particular that we have all tournament. We got a little bit of a luck with the penalty for sure. And then a big moment at the end that transpired from a couple of proactive substitutions, which everyone's been crying out for all tournament. So everything seemed to come together and there's just a bit of a feeling in the air now that maybe it's our time. But very, very enjoyable.
Tommy, go back to the start of the game then. I actually thought England started really bright, looked like we were on the front foot, picking up from some of the place we left off from the Switzerland game, but then kind of got a bit derailed by a Xavi Simons worldie. But do you think England could have done a little bit more about that goal?
It's a tough one, really. Declan Rice obviously made a little error and he loses his footing so he can't get back. But that Xavi Simons, okay, it was quite close to Pickford, but it was an absolute thunder bastard. Really, it was proper pile driver. Maybe the centre-halves could have got out to him a bit quicker.
That's what I thought. Carl Walker could have got to him.
Yeah, and but you framed that question by saying we were derailed by that goal. But actually, I don't think we were. I thought England would play better because obviously the Dutch are better, which and they've got more attacking sort of ambition. So it felt like there was more space. There was more space for Foden and Mainoo and Bellingham to work in. But I was really surprised at just how dominant we were in that first half. We were unbelievable. Phil Foden had his best 45 minutes in an England shirt I've ever seen. He was absolutely, like, breathtakingly good alongside Kobbie Mainoo in there. And if it wasn't for, like, a really good save of Verbruggen or the other side of the crossbar, we would be talking about that Phil Foden first half as like an all-time England performance because it was that good. So, look, it was unbelievable. The worrying thing for me, obviously being that kind of negative England fan or like worrying England fan, was that I was sat there at halftime going, we were so dominant there that, and it's still 1-1. And the Dutch always carried a threat on set pieces. I think they hit the bar with Dumfries in the first half. Obviously, Van Dijk, he's always a threat at set pieces. So there's always that sort of nagging doubt in the back of your mind. And actually, I think a sign of how much Koeman respected that England first half performance was when Memphis Depay went off in, what, the 35th minute, they brought on a centre mid in his place to shore things up. And actually, instead of, say, bringing on Wout Weghorst, And then they brought on Wout Weghorst for a winger at half time. They basically completely shut the game down. And okay, the second half it sort of petered out into one of those games that just looked like it was going to go to extra time. And actually, I thought the Dutch towards the end of the second half were looking a little bit fresher, which again goes to show how well Southgate does, because he brings on. He did what most people thought he didn't have the ability to do, which he had the foresight to say, oh, Harry Kane, he looks knackered. Phil Foden, yeah, he's played brilliantly, but he looks knackered. And he had the foresight to bring those guys on. And obviously, Palmer and Watkins, they combined for that goal. And I can't get over how good that striker play from Watkins is. It's just a world-class moment from a very good Premier League footballer who's had the season of his life, and he's had to be patient. And we spoke on the last pod about that chance against Denmark, and if he had scored that, his whole Euros would have changed. well, his whole Euros and his whole life has changed now because he's delivered one of the moments of our lifetimes as an England fan. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it really was. Laurie, coming back to the first half, and obviously Tomo says that it was a great first half performance, and it was, and we had the Foden chances he alluded to where there was a save slash block on the line, him hitting the post. But England's equaliser came about through VAR controversy. Watching it together, we said absolutely no way that that's a penalty. Doesn't look like one at all. They even ITV brought on their American pundit to say that it's not going to be looked at because it's not sort of a clear and obvious error. And then they send the referee to the monitor. I mean, we absolutely take it as England fans, but if you were Dutch, you'd be sick seeing that given.
Yeah, it just wasn't a penalty, was it? And we've spoken till we're blue in the face about VAR, even when it's been implemented quite well with this tournament. The decision-making, particularly around what a penalty looks like, has been atrocious. Obviously, the Denmark one against Germany was really poor. And that one last night was really poor. And if it was against us, yeah, I wouldn't be very happy. But at the same time, you know, we've had our fair share of bad luck in tournaments before. Maradona's handball, Sol Campbell's goal being ruled out, David Beckham getting sent off for that little kick, the ghost goal from Frank Lampard against the Germans back in 2010. So we've ridden our fair share of bad luck as well. And this time we're coming out on the right side of it. And I just think there's a train of thought to suggest you make your own luck with the sort of preparation and the way that you go about tournament football. And we're very savvy with it now. And when Harry Kane stepped up, you just felt he was going to score. And then I thought we'd probably go on and maybe go in front. And we did everything right in that first half, like Tigo said, other than put the ball in the back of the net. And I'll just reiterate how good Phil Foden and Kobbie Mainoo were, in particular in that kind of inside right channel of midfield. Create so much space, and on another day Foden would have had a couple, but definitely the best half of football we've played this tournament for sure.
Just on that penalty as well, penalty as well, I was just going to say that's the kind of decision that makes you think that it's meant to be, because quite often these tournaments, the fine margins from winning and losing is so fine, and it could just be like, for instance, last tournament, Harry Kane missing that penalty. Do you know what I mean? Or in this tournament, obviously, we've had the Jude Bellingham goal. We've had the penalties. We've had that decision there. And then the Ollie Watkins goal. Everything seems to be going for Southgate and for England. And Laura rightly alludes to the fact that previously it hasn't. So something switched there where just maybe, I know it sounds ridiculous, but the footballing gods seem to be on England's side in this tournament. So hopefully we can take that into the final against Spain, because rightly so, we'll probably be underdogs. But I just think, and I know we'll speak about that game a little bit later on, but I just think our bench is so strong compared to Spain's that I think we could go and win it. We could go and win it because of our bench.
I think there's probably evidence from last night to show that Southgate's getting the confidence in some of those players to come off the bench now, like bringing Harry Kane off. And that's only going to work in your favour if he needs to be bold in the final at any point, be that to grab a winner or to get back into the game or to consolidate and hold the ball up there. So to bring Harry Kane and Phil Foden off was a big kind of statement at 1-1, bearing in mind you're probably about to go into another half hour of football. And he's done it for Watkins and Palmer. Watkins obviously a little bit older but inexperienced at tournament level, and Palmer's so young. So yeah, fair play to him, he got that right. So 1-0 at half time, you're thinking, how on earth are we not winning this game? And then it kind of felt, Laura, a little bit stodgier in the second half. I think Holland made the changes Tigo alluded to. I think they're actually blessed with Memphis Depay being injured. It allowed him to make a tactical change that he clearly wanted to do, but maybe wouldn't have if there wasn't an injury hooking someone at half hour in a semi-final. But they kind of sat in a bit deeper then, Holland, almost looked like they were willing to settle for a set-piece counter-attack goal and take it into extra time.
Yeah, and they sort of closed the spaces and in between the lines down well, and it was harder to play through, it was harder to create more clear-cut chances. And there was just a time towards the end of the second half where you thought, and we've been saying this for so many games, you really need to act now, Gareth, because we've got players on the bench that can stretch it. We actually said on our last pod, Ollie Watkins would be a good option against the Dutch, because the one thing we weren't getting from Harry Kane last night was stretching them backwards, running towards their own goal. And when Ollie Watkins came on against Denmark, he almost had the carbon copy chance that he had last night, and the keeper saved it. But you just thought there might be a moment in it. People keep saying this tournament's being decided by moments, not by teams getting blown away. And that's because a lot of the time teams are setting up to counteract the opposition, like we so often do, rather than implement your own game. And that's what Holland did for a lot of the second half. So although there's quite a lot of frustration, other than that, was it the Van Dijk effort that Pickford had to make a save from? A couple of set pieces. We weren't really in trouble. We just weren't really affecting the final third of the pitch as we were in the first half. But you always felt, like Tigo said, the bench we've got is so good. Every time we bring on our sub, that substitute is the best player of their club. Cole Palmer's the best player at Chelsea. Watkins at Villa. Eze at Palace. Tony at Brentford. Do you know what I mean? Anyone that we bring on is an absolutely class player that can affect the game, particularly at the top end of the pitch. And look what happened. Cole Palmer picked it up. Apparently they said at halftime, Ollie Watkins said to Palmer, "You're going to come on with me, set me up and I'll score." Palmer picked it up. You knew exactly what would happen. Ollie Watkins makes a run that Harry Kane hasn't made all tournament. Palmer finds him. And then obviously the finish is just, I mean, the finish is amazing, but the touch, there must be such a temptation to take the first touch with the outside of the foot to sort of trap the ball, kill the ball. He just takes it on his instep, turns with it, and then fires it into the only millimetre spot of the goal, where you beat the defender and you beat the goalkeeper, and obviously jubilation afterwards from Ollie Watkins, who looked like all his dreams had come at once, which they had. So that was good to see.
For his goal as well, I've watched England's training videos, and they do these like short, they've got full-size goals, but like on like half of a pitch, maybe even shorter than that, and it's like four aside, and it is just constant wave after wave of attack, and you just watch them finish across goal all the time. And then they do individual shooting drills where it's like pop a pass off, get the ball back and finish. And Anthony Gordon actually stood out in that, just kept opening his body up and doing that finish where he sort of a bit Henry-esque, open it up and tuck it far corner. But Tony and Watkins were like, I say dragging it, firing it across goal into that far corner. And it's like that constant repetition and visualization of doing that, added on to the fact that the Denmark game, he had a similar chance but went near post and went to Kasper Schmeichel. It's like all written in the stars to just fire that across goal into the side netting. And that feeling at 89-59 was just unrivaled.
Yeah, and just on Ollie Watkins, a couple of points. One being he's such a good advert for our podcast because we obviously are called the Pyramid Podcast, and he is very much an English football pyramid player. He started off at Exeter, went on loan to Western Super Mare, playing in the sixth tier of English football. Obviously did well there, did well at Exeter, got his move to Brentford, who we all know have been a brilliant EFL club and now a Premier League club. Then got his big move to Aston Villa. Probably did okay, but when Steven Gerrard brings in Danny Ings, you're thinking, oh, is he going to start? Who's he going to start? And then Unai Emery comes in and he's completely transformed him into this elite level striker. His story and his journey is so inspirational. And it goes to show how strong the English football pyramid is, that there are stories like that. And actually, if you look across the England squad, there are loads of stories similar to Ollie Watkins. Another point on Watkins I just wanted to make is it's an absolute masterclass from Gareth Southgate to take three strikers. We all thought, oh, is he going to take two? Is he going to take three? And we thought, oh, it won't really matter if he takes three because the third one won't get any minutes. But actually, all three have done brilliant. And for all the talk of Harry Kane being unfit and being relatively poor in comparison to what he is like, he's currently sitting equal with Danny Olmo as the top goal scorer in the tournament, just below him on assists for the race for the golden boot. In that first 45 minutes, Harry Kane, that was his best game. So, and that was really encouraging. Obviously, in the second half, he slowed down as England slowed down. He doesn't look like he's got 90 minutes in him, but that's really encouraging for the Spain game because I thought he did really well to hold off De Vrij and Van Dijk and link play in the first half. I know the whole of England's team played better. So maybe it's easier for your strikers to play better. But yeah, that's another encouraging sign for the final.
Yeah, it was. And also another encouraging sign is we've gone from games where we're registering our shots on target late into the 90 minutes or, you know, even beyond that. I think in one of the games, maybe it was in the Slovakia game, 90+4. But we were having Foden taking shots early on. Harry Kane got a few shots away. You've had the obviously the goals that we've scored. Bukayo Saka is inches away from a second goal. Kyle Walker narrowly offside. I think maybe if the ball goes a fraction earlier from Foden, you're 2-1 up then. So we're creating chances as well. And we'll come on to, we'll preview the Spain game in a bit. But I've watched Spain and they're free-flowing attacking football. And if they want to leave those spaces for England to exploit, then fair play. Let's just have a shootout with them. Let's see who's best on the day. Let's have an amazing game of football and let's see who comes out on top. Because I don't think Spain are going to sit in and Holland probably the most open team that we've played last night, and that showed with the chances that we created. So I think that bodes really well.
Yeah, and there's an argument to say that I know England have got better throughout the tournament, but and our best two performances have come against the Swiss and the Dutch. So there is an argument to say that this England team play better when they play better opposition because there's that little bit more space. Whereas the first four games, you come up against countries who are just sitting in, basically saying, we're not as good as you, so we're hoping to just hit you on the counter-attack and hit you on a set piece. Whereas Spain won't do that. And Spain have shown, even though they are a very good team, they have shown vulnerabilities. And we'll come on to the France game in a little bit, but there was a couple of chances for France where they've missed a couple, like three or four really good chances in the second half. And they're the moments that you just need to capitalise on in tournament football. And if you don't, you go out.
Yeah. Laurie, before we move on into the Spain-France game, you've mentioned John Stones in the WhatsApp groups this morning. There's been kind of coverage on Walker having a better game last night. We've spoken about Konsa and Gaye. There's been the constant conversation about the left-sided fullback, Trippier, Shaw, etc., etc. But John Stones has just gone under the radar and just continuously performs.
Yeah, he's just someone that's never mentioned, but like in a good way. Because it's just like every other single in the player in the team, I think, has probably had a question mark against them at some point. Even Kane, even Bellingham, even Foden. But John Stones is just unreal every single game. And he is so good in the middle of a back three. He always plays so well there for us. And in the first and the second half last night, he actually was stepping into midfield a lot more as well, giving us some more options in there and creating different pitches and angles. And just really lucky that he's been fit for pretty much every one of these games, I think, that we've had in the last 6 years under Southgate. He was there in Russia, sort of brace in that tournament, I think. He was there in the last Euros. He was there in the World Cup and he's there again. And if we do go on to win it, he'll be a big, big sort of figurehead and pitcher boy, I think, for the Southgate era. Although he's not spoken about too much, I think everyone knows how good John Stones and how important he is.
Yeah, it's like when a referee puts in a 10 out of 10 performance on a Sunday and no one mentions him. And it's like, you know, the referee's done well when they don't get mentioned. And basically, John Stones is that good now that everyone just expects him to be putting in these performances. And another encouraging sign was Kyle Walker's performance. I thought that was his best game, which shows he's still got a little bit in him, considering he's 34, and he's at the end of a long season with Man City. And he definitely struggled in those first few games, but he looked back to his normal self yesterday. And there's one moment where he made an unbelievable tackle on Gakpo. I think it was Gakpo. And those are the type of sort of moments that just lift you and lift the whole team. And we had loads of those moments yesterday, in the first half especially. Whenever the ball broke down, it just looked like Mainu just deflected it onto our player or just got in a tackle. And it was just, we were just all over them. I couldn't believe how good we played in that first half. It was brilliant to watch. And it's not often you say that about a Gareth Southgate side.
No, I thought his comments before the game were brilliant. And Gary Neville spoke to them as well about that's kind of like showing vulnerability and showing honesty, that he said that he's felt a collective weight come off that squad shoulder, almost as if it was like, we've got through to a semi-final now. So if it doesn't go our way tonight, we can probably look back and say, well, we made it to the last four. You know, you'd get comments and criticism about the performances, and that this England squad should be doing more. But it was almost like we got through the Swiss, got through a penalty shootout, and he's just noticed that collective like weight lifted. And I think that really showed yesterday where they expressed themselves more. The handbrake was off. They weren't fearful of going out like they might have been in the group stages, where you just want to get through and win your group. And then, of course, you got to beat Slovakia in the last 16. And then you really should get past the Swiss. I thought they were brilliant comments. And that just shows how, you know, maybe tactically and as a general kind of football coach, Gareth Southgate is going to come up short against some of the other managers. But in regards to building culture, environment, mentality, I don't think there's too many better than him. So can only really credit him with that. And let's have it right, the guy's given us two Euros finals in a row, first final on foreign soil away from England. So he's going to go down in history as one of the best. I just really, really hope for him that that is with a major trophy against his name.
But do you know what really annoys me is just like how, why people keep trying to downplay these achievements? Like, everyone's sort of, we're reeling off these three semi-finals in four. Now we've got two finals in a row in the European Championships. First final on foreign soil ever. And you listen to Talk Sport and you've got people go ringing in going, well, we've got to win it now. And, oh, we had an easy draw. As if, like, Gareth Southgate's in the UEFA offices, like, doing our draw. The reason why we had an easy draw in this tournament in particular was because France came second in their group. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Like we can't affect that. Like I'm sick of people downplaying the achievement. Like Simon Jordan this morning is just going, yeah, but the Dutch aren't very good. It's like you can't do wrong for doing right if you're Gareth Southgate, or like you beat Switzerland, who are a good team. Like why do we, just because we've got the best players, why do we think we like are entitled to just go against the Swiss, dominate them for 90 minutes, win 3-0? Light up a fag and go, oh, that was easy, wasn't it? And then why do we feel, or why do some fans anyway, feel entitled to do that against the Dutch? Like that second half, the sort of the half an hour between maybe minute 55 and minute 75 or minute 80, we sort of suffered a little bit. The Dutch got on top. But you can't go 90 minutes in a semi-final of the Euros and expect to just completely dominate and be on easy street. And what this team has demonstrated under Southgate in this tournament more than ever is that they've got the mentality to win even when they're not playing well, or to win when things are going against them. So, yeah, look, come on, let's just get behind them. Now, there's a sort of a feeling that even if we beat Spain, people will just be like, oh, well, we should have. Look, we've got Bellingham, we've got Foden, we've got Kane. As if, like, we've won a tournament in our lifetimes. We haven't. This might be the only time we win something in our lifetime. We have to sort of start enjoying the moment.
Yeah, people have got to. I think quite a few of those journalists went early. They saw what was happening with England and thought that they had the script written and that they'd go early with it. You saw some of the BBC team, including Lineker. You've seen it on TalkSport with Simon Jordan and some of the others. They went early with that England are going to crash out early and it's going to be Southgate's fault and his sort of handbrake on and having to release the shackles on all this talent, and it's not worked out for them. And now they're just doubling down on their point because they're just trying to bury their head in the sand and say, make it stop, because the guy's got us to another final. So if that's what Simon Jordan wants to do and not enjoy the rest of the week, enjoy the final and potentially enjoy all of the good feelings that come from a tournament win, which can we say none of us have experienced unless you were born 1966 and before, then that's up to him. But us three, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners and a lot of the English public will go on to enjoy it.
Do you know what's crazy as well, just before we move on quickly, is I can see us losing the final on Sunday and then Southgate getting stick, which is absolutely insane. I just think whatever England do now, we should be praised. We've had an amazing tournament. Okay, we didn't play that well in the first few games. Who gives a fuck? Like, They have delivered and given us some of the best moments of our life as an England fan. That Bellingham overhead, the penalties, that goal last night. Like, they should be praised no matter what now, even if we go and lose the final against Spain. Like, we've all seen how these finals can get decided by a little fine margin call, a little deflection here or there. So I just hope that even if we do lose, that Southgate doesn't get any more unwarranted stick, and the players as well.
We've outperformed France, we've outperformed Portugal, we've outperformed Germany, we've outperformed Italy, we've outperformed every other side other than Spain so far. And we're one game away from winning it, so let's have it. So looking ahead to that final then, Lauro, Spain standing the way, just a quick reflection on their game against France. Obviously, Mbappe putting a ball in early for Kolo Muani, and you may be thinking then, are Spain going to get old manned a little bit here by France? Have they got the mettle to come from behind? But two wonder goals from Lamine Yamal and Dani Olmo was enough to see them through.
Yeah, and I think everyone can see Spain are probably the best footballing side at this tournament and maybe the best to watch and probably the best team. But one thing that, you know, I was thinking, and I said this in the last pod before the Germany game, is do they have that character that we've shown, the resilience to come from behind and rise out of adversity and in those situations that always happen inevitably in tournaments where you go behind or you get a bit of bad luck. And they did it against Germany. They won it in the last minute of extra time. And then they came from behind against France. When France went up, you sort of worried and thought, okay, this might be, like you say, a little bit of another one of those French know-how games where they just get themselves through. But a couple of real pieces of quality, obviously, from your teenage winger that I think Tigo highlighted before the tournament, who I'm not sure had scored up until then, but obviously was saving the best for the semi. And then a really, really decent bit of play from Dani Olmo, who I think was only playing maybe because of an injury to Pedri in midfield, who looks a really, really good player and someone that will be dangerous on Sunday, gets another one. And then they managed to hold it out. So although France went at their best, they still had some chances. Spain just created better ones and obviously took their chance and made it through to the final. And it probably would have been a bit of a travesty if they didn't, because they have been the standout footballing team of this tournament. Some of their players have been absolutely fantastic. That winger, Dani Olmo, the Ruiz lad, and even players like Cucurella, who have probably had their stock fallen over the last couple of years, just look like really good players again. So I think we've got the right final.
Tomo, from a France perspective, kind of a bit more of what they've shown so far this tournament. I say they started bright, Mbappe's ball in, great header from Kolo Muani, but second half felt a little bit, went out with a bit of a whimper. I know they created a couple of chances, but it just kind of felt like Mbappe not at it. You know, they're bringing like Griezmann off the bench because he can't stay in the team because of his performances, having to turn to like Giroud to go a bit more direct. Just something missing for them. Maybe Paul Pogba?
Maybe, yeah. He's always done it in a France shirt, hasn't he? I would just say, look, it's just Mbappe. Like, he's the magician in that team, and he's so like on a different planet than the other players. Like, if you remember the World, like, cash your mind back to the World Cup final, they were losing 2-0 against Argentina. They played terrible in the first half. They actually played terrible in the second half as well. But I think on minute 81. Mbappe does something special, or they get a penalty or whatever, and then the game comes alive, and then the atmosphere completely changed, and all that France needed was like one of those chances to go in, and all of a sudden the France fans get up, the atmosphere changes, Spain shit themselves a little bit like that that German equaliser in the quarterfinals, because I don't think Spain are good at keeping the ball and good at, like you say, petering out the game. But they still gave up a couple of chances. I think on minute 84, Mbappe did his trademark run, cut inside, and he had a really good chance. And 9 times out of 10, like a fit and firing, Kylian Mbappe scores that, and he just blazed it over. And that's the difference. And if he scores that and then France go on to win the penalty shootout, we're talking about, oh, Mbappe's back to his best, and Spain have disappointed again, even though they were the best team in the tournament. So, fine margins. I know I'm going to repeat that fine margins line again, but just like France, I just thought they were disappointing in the final third. But really, in that game, it was just that 5 minutes of madness, really. Spain didn't really offer too much, I didn't think, apart from that 5 minutes where they just like blasted France away. But it still takes two wonder goals to notch the goals. Do you know what I mean? So it's at this level and international football, it's just about like individual moments, really. But Spain have been the best team in the tournament, and they definitely deserve to go through. But what I will say about this narrative around Spain is I hate this whole good guys versus bad guys thing, as if like Spain are playing like football for the masses. Fuck off. Honestly, I do not care how Spain... I think Spain quite often are boring. But Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams have made them quite fun to watch. But quite often, they're just boring. They're tiki-taki, tiki-taka. I keep saying that wrong. And so yeah, they definitely deserve to get to the final. And I agree with Laura, the two best teams in the tournament are in the final.
And they obviously had to do that with a few out against France. Obviously, Carvajal will likely come back in at right back. You had Jesus Navas, who had a tricky start with Mbappe putting the ball in. He then got booked, didn't he, as well? I think he got hooked either at halftime or fairly quickly in the second half. But I think there was a stat that he's actually older than Lamine Yamal's dad, Jesus Navas. So he did, you know, he did okay this considering the circumstances. But Carvajal likely to come back in. Lenormand, who has just sealed a move to Atletico Madrid, likely to come back into the centre-back position as well. So he'll be back in. And there was a little scare as well for Alvaro Morata at the end, where they're all celebrating and a security guard runs over to try and stop a pitch invader, but slips on the deck and crashes into Morata's knee. And Morata had to hobble off the pitch after the game, but he's come out and said that he'll be fine. But Spain, full strength. I think England, barring any sort of people who've not come through the game and team news to come out over the coming days, will be at full strength as well. So it's just going to be a great day and a great game.
Do you think Luke Shaw's going to start then now?
Yeah, I do. I think half-time, he clearly saw that there were opportunities there. There was a few times Trippier was in acres of space and Declan Rice wasn't getting the ball out to him, or he did get the ball out there, but he had to cut back in on his right because he couldn't drive down the left-hand side, and Dumfries knew he wasn't going to go down the outside, so just sort of showed him inside. Luke Shaw got given 45 minutes. They had the trust there that if it needed to, he could have done another half hour as well. So he's fit now. It's probably harsh on Kieran Trippier because he's played every single game and it's now the final, but sometimes there are decisions that you have to make in a major tournament for it. And I do think that Luke Shaw will come in.
Yeah, I actually think that was a pre-planned substitution with the knowledge that he can play 75 minutes if needed going into extra time, but also the knowledge that if we get through, he'll be starting.
Looking ahead to where it's going to be won and lost then, Laurie, do you think some of the big battles there, if we do continue with the back three, is going to be Shaw and Saka, how they do defensively against Yamal and Nico Williams, but then also what can they do going forward as well against the Spanish fullbacks?
Yes, but I think the key battles in midfield, Spain are all about Rodri and Ruiz and the boys in midfield that can release those wingers, turn defence into attack, control the ball, control the tempo. It's going to be a huge, huge game for Declan Rice, Kobbie Mainoo, and probably Jude Bellingham as well, who I think will probably, even if we set up like we have been, I think he'll have a bigger job to do defensively in the middle of the park and in trying to control where the ball goes and how quickly it is. We allow Spain to play through, because that's their kind of big strength, I think. And then all the plaudits go to the wide boys who have got the pace and can get in behind. So yes, secondarily it will be how the fullbacks cope with their wide men and how much they can get into attacking positions as well. But it's all about the middle of the park for me. I think Declan Rice is going to have to stand up and show why he's as good as Rodri and one of the best midfielders in the world, as we all think he is and has been for Arsenal. And, you know, we know that when we're on the ball, probably Spain will be a little bit more open and will give us a little less respect than the other teams. So we might actually have some more joy or find it easier going forward.
but we're going to be looking over our shoulders a lot if we let Rodri get on the ball and dictate it. So I think making sure that we're solid in the middle of the park is a big, big one for me.
Yeah, can I just make 2 points on that? Because I completely agree. The first point is that that box midfield, the switch to the box midfield has completely changed our fortunes. It's a subtle switch because basically it's just meant Foden plays in his natural position because Saka's really playing as a right winger. And we're just basically trusting Kyle Walker to play as a right centre-half and a right-back in the same game. The positive thing is basically it will be 4-3 in the centre mids. Another positive thing is the reason why it sort of petered out last night is because Netherlands saw how bad it was going for them in the first 35 minutes and they were like, fucking hell, we've got to do something about this. They brought on that Veerman and then they shored things up even further by bringing on Weghorst. I don't think Spain will do that. I don't think they have the facilities to do that. I don't think they even asked about doing that. I think they trust Ruiz, Olmo and Rodri to just win that battle, which might work in our favour. And I can't see them, for instance, dropping a Yamal or a Nico Williams for a sort of a more central midfielder or maybe playing Danny Olmo in one of those positions and then bringing in another centre midfield to shore that up. So actually, I think it will be of England's benefit because Spain will want to dominate us. But just a note of caution, there were a couple times in that first half, and especially one time in the second half, where the Dutch played through our press. And especially in that second half where they played through our press, it was like an absolute all, like everyone was touching the ball, proper sweeping move. And if it wasn't for Mark Gahey, who sort of like slipped and then got up quickly and dived and got in the way of Wout Weghorst, it would have been one of the all-time Euros goals, really. But you can see Spain doing that a little bit more often than the Dutch because obviously they've got better players. So yeah, it's a really interesting game. And I think it will be, I know sometimes you can say finals are a little bit cagey, a little bit boring, but I think it will be like a really good game.
I do as well. I think it's going to be an absolute humdinger of a game where this Euros has maybe been spoken about being a little bit boring. The semi-finals came to life early, albeit petered out in the second half because a little bit cagier. But I think this final's got an all-timer written all over it with two teams who are going to go at each other because England are going to be afforded that space and we're going to play like we did yesterday. Just on the Kyle Walker point, that was a really good point actually about him trusted to be covered at centre-back and right-back. He made an absolutely massive tackle on Cody Gakpo, didn't he, last night? Where Gakpo's going through where he's got that space down there from another, I think, Dutch beating the press and countering us. And that was an absolutely massive tackle. I think he hit the ball into Gakpo and it went through to Pickford and went out for a goal kick. So unreal from him. And it's going to be electric to see Kyle Walker, who doesn't really get beaten in 1v1s, have this Nico Williams run at him, who is an absolute lightning bolt of a player.
Yeah, that would be a massive battle, but that also goes to show how much you listen to me on this podcast because I mentioned that tackle about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate it. Anyone want to talk about the Ollie Watkins goal? Go on, Laurie.
I just hope that we go into this final and leave it all out there trying to win. Like you just mentioned about we got cut open a couple of times and our press was beat. Spain are going to have chances. They're really good. They're going to create chances. At some point, you need your defenders to defend if it's last ditch and you're going to need Pickford to make saves. They're in the team to do that. That's one of their prime jobs. It's not going to have it all our own way. But we need to make sure we do enough and have enough of the ball to create chances and affect it at their end as well. We need to get Foden and Bellingham on the ball. Harry Kane needs to be involved a little bit more. And we need to play like we did in the first half last night. And if we're going to get beat trying to win rather than being really, really, really cautious and getting done like with a little bit of quality and it's 1-0. So hopefully it'll be a really good game. I will just say, I think we're over 2-1. I think that's high. I think that's high. I think that's value for England at over 2-1 in a one-off game when we haven't lost all tournament. And we've had before the tournament, I talked about momentum. We've had the quarters, we've had the semis, we've had the final. This is a natural progression. We were favourites pre-tournament. We're in the final and somehow we're not favourites. And that's because Spain have played really well, but they haven't played us yet. And that you never know. You know, I'm not a tactical master, but we might have something that causes them a lot of trouble. And once the final kicks off, it might be very hard for them to tweak and do what the Dutch did last night to try and quieten us down a little bit. So I'm full of hope. I think 2-1's high. I'm back in England, and my prediction for the final will be 2-1, and it will be Foden and Bellingham.
Just a positive note to add as well. Rodri, he is the best DM in the world by a country mile. And actually, I think he's only lost like 2 games out of the last 100 or something ridiculous. But one of those games where he lost was when Kobbie Mainoo played him off the park in the FA Cup final. And Kobbie Mainoo will be facing him on Sunday. So hopefully that's a good omen.
Yeah, definitely. That box midfield was what Ten Hag utilised, wasn't it? I think you spoke about it in one of the previous pods, Tomo, about that. So definitely hopeful that we can win that midfield battle. A couple of little stats around it. We haven't played, actually, Spain too much recently, but we have played them in the Nations League where we lost at home, but we went and won 3-2 in Seville 6 years ago. We went 3-0 up, actually. Sterling, Rashford and Kane were absolutely electric. And then looking back in major tournaments, we've had a draw with them in the last Euros that we played them 0-0, but we did beat them in a quarter final back in a previous tournament as well. So potentially some good omens there. So, Tomo, we've had Laurie's prediction, Bellingham and Foden winning the game for us 2-1. Where are you going?
I'm going to go. We're going to win it on penalties.
Okay.
1-1 win the game and we're going to win it on penalties.
I'm going to stick. There's going to be an absolute humdinger. I think there's going to be quite a few goals. I'm going to go 3-2 England. Phil Foden is like building, simmering up throughout this tournament. He was so unlucky yesterday. I think he's going to have a massive say in the final. I think he might score the goal. And yeah, I think Harry Kane might grab one as well. And somehow, even though people would have slated his performances, he's going to have lifted a major trophy and be the top goal scorer as well. So, boys, I think we'll end it there then. We'll obviously be back, hopefully, after the weekend to talk about England being European champions. One more to go. Cheers, boys.
Well done, lads. 1-2